The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
When the news broke last night about the sad premature death of Dolores O'Riordan, we did a special item with Nadine O'Regan and John Cadell. It is available for download on iTunes. It's on our podcasts on the todayfm.com website, the Last Word page. But I think we will, as John and Nadine are back with us again this evening for their usual Tuesday evening chat about music, I think we will talk a little bit more now that the sort of it's all sunk in over the last 24 hours, John.
Yeah, we were all still a bit in shock yesterday when we were talking about it, I think. And I certainly spent most of yesterday evening just reading articles online about her and just finding out more about it. Lots of stuff that I never knew. I mean, for example, her dad had a horrific motorbike accident in 1968, which left him somewhat brain damaged. So even before she came into the world, you know, there was trouble ahead for her. You know, she referred to her father as retarded, and she suffered sexual abuse from the age of 8 for years, and said if my dad had been well, he would have killed him, this family yeah. friend. So, you know, I wasn't aware of any of this before yesterday, I'll be honest, and it sort of just puts into perspective this pretty sad life that Dolores O'Riordan had, certainly in her early years.
You know, because it also, I think, put in context, I mean, a lot of the time the air rage incidents that you referred to yesterday yeah. with the Aer Lingus stewardess in 2014, you know, in retrospect, that was something that happened to a woman who wasn't well.
Mm. Well, she had battled anorexia for a lot of her life, and there had been so many instances. I think the thing about Dolores O'Riordan that was so remarkable is that at one level she was so able to be as one with the everyman, if you like. Like, she would come in and she described the Pope, I think, at one point as a lovely man, which was exactly her way of talking. She would speak in a way that everybody could recognise, and yet these extraordinary and often extraordinarily terrible things had happened to her, and she'd suffered from depression. She had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. She had terrible back pains for the most recent years of her life and had been very medicated as a result. Her tour was postponed as a result of that in the summer, the US leg of the tour. And so you were talking about a woman who kind of flip-flopped from being this person that everybody could relate to, who could go on the Late Late Show and speak in very ordinary terms. And people would talk about her and say, oh, that's Dolores. She got married in what looked like a white bikini with lace over it, or she did something mad. But she always connected with people, and her songs connected with people. I mean, tracks like Linger, anyone would immediately understand that that was a tune and a half sung by a woman of remarkable ability and with a voice like no one else.
You see, what also struck me, John, is, and it must be very difficult for a lot of people who get so successful so young, so quickly, as it. And you produce some magnificent work in your first couple of albums, but then the pressure is on to actually repeat it, and then the public isn't as interested.
Yeah.
So you're sort of left there with a sort of a magnificent back catalogue, but you're not producing anything else which is engaging with the public in a new way, if you
yeah,
know what I mean.
Yes, and I don't want to say the rot set in, but certainly, you know, the shine was taken off the Cranberries as early as 1996. The third album, For the Faithful Departed, didn't get good reviews at all. And in terms of, Nadine mentioned her anorexia, I don't know how anybody looking at the front cover of that album couldn't have seen that she wasn't well. I remember she was also on the front of Q magazine, and at the time I went, she looks sick. You'd wonder, like, with her being so young, who was looking after her, you know, or who, you know, how many signs did they need that she wasn't well? But to get to your actual point, yeah, I mean, the Cranberries would now be considered, had they gone out and toured this year, next year, they would be considered a legacy band, very much. And, you know,
but yet the music stands up exceptionally well. The first couple of albums,
yeah,
the music is excellent.
That's without doubt. But people there, those are the songs that people will be going
yeah,
to hear.
Not the new stuff.
Yes,
and
exactly.
You have to bear in mind, though, that she succeeded and they succeeded against all expectations. I mean, when they toured the US originally, I think they toured with Suede actually at one point. Nobody in the British press expected the Cranberries to do very much, and it was America and specifically MTV that picked up on them. MTV decided to put Linger on heavy rotation, and again it was the kind of the ordinary person who just wanted to hear a tune and heard Dolores O'Riordan with that remarkable voice. That person reached out and said, yes, who is this band? Who is this woman? I want to hear this band. And the critical kind of notices weren't necessarily that fawning or positive at the start. So the press had to come around to the idea of the Cranberries and Dolores O'Riordan. And so in the 1990s, when they became that kind of band that could grace the cover of Q magazine, there was a feeling that it was almost this against all odds, or the little band that could, you know, they weren't fated by the British press in the way that, you have to bear in mind, this was the time of Britpop, and it was also the time of grunge. No Need to Argue, I think, came out in 93, and Kurt Cobain would have passed away in 94. And so it was a very interesting time, because Britpop was happening in the UK, but over in the States, things were very, very different. And I actually think that the Cranberries fitted into the US mentality much better than they did the British one.
Okay, what we have to play a little bit is just a clip from a different version of Linger than the one we probably all know and love. This one is taken from Something Else, which was an album released by the Cranberries last year featuring unplugged and orchestral versions of their music.
A couple of things struck me. I mean, first of all, the delivery is flawless.
Beautiful.
I mean, she just, you know, it brings me back to my point I made a few weeks ago about the female voice doesn't seem to deteriorate the way the male voice does. That is just stunningly good. Also, one thing that struck me from looking at Twitter was she the first huge female rock star out of Ireland? She must have been. I can't think of anybody else.
Well, Sinead O'Connor.
Sinead O'Connor,
on, like, appearing singing Mandinka on US TV back in, I think it would have been the late 80s.
Yeah, 87 or so.
She would have just have been ahead of her.
But the what Twitter was saying in general was, and even Murren of this parish was saying, you know, she did so much for Limerick and she inspired young Irish girls to basically say, well, I can do anything. And that was all over my Twitter timeline last night, how much of an inspiration she was to young Irish women and speaking about the things that they were going through.
Nadine, you were in the National Concert Hall last night for the 60th birthday celebration of Shane McGowan, and I presume Dolores O'Riordan was remembered.
Yeah, John Kelly was hosting the evening, and before Caris Matthews, formerly of Catatonian and now of course with BBC Radio 6, came on stage, John said that on behalf of everyone assembled that they wanted to remember Dolores, and they dedicated the track that Caris was performing, The Broad Majestic Shannon, to Dolores O'Riordan and her memory. And Bono also sang the word linger at the end of his performance. It was a remarkable evening, a really remarkable, phenomenal evening that I don't think anyone there will ever forget. The biggest people on the bill, as John Kelly said, were not even on the bill. I mean, Bono showed up, Sinead O'Connor arrived at the start of the second half, and when she took the stage, a silence just fell over everyone. And all you could hear was the whisper, you know, it's Sinead, it's Sinead. And particularly, you know, on the day that the word of Dolores O'Riordan passing had reached everyone, such a terrible day. And then to see this music community gathered together, to see Sinead O'Connor, to see Bono, to see Glenn Hanser doing Fairy Tale of New York with Lisa O'Neill, and also all these other assembled musicians, Nick Cave coming out on stage with Shane McGowan in a wheelchair, of course, now, and sitting down with him to perform a duet together. And then Michael D. Higgins, President Michael D., on the side. It was amazing because the very first, second song in, Jesse Malin said, "Everyone, get up out of your chairs. Get to your feet." Now, the National Concert Hall is a pretty stuffy venue. You're very locked in, and everyone jumped to their feet, and President Michael D. jumped to his feet as well. And he may not have been as tall as some of the other people in the room, but you could see him leaning over the balcony, giving it absolute socks. And of course, he came on at the end then to present Shane McGowan with a Lifetime Achievement Award. And it was just, I mean, I'm not even mentioning half the people that were there. Bobby Gillespie from Primal Scream was there. Also, Carl Barat from the Libertines. It was just unbelievable. Imelda May, Camille O'Sullivan, Caoimhe Reardon of the Pogues, delivering a spine-tingling version of Haunted. And yeah, it was unreal. It was surreal.
Let's hear a little bit of A Rainy Night in Soho by the Pogues.
I've been loving you a long time. Down all the years, down all the days. And I've cried for all your troubles. Smile at your funny little ways. We watched our friends grow up together. And we saw them as they fell. Some of them fell into heaven. Some of them fell into hell. I took shelter from a shower. And I stepped into your arms.
Okay, by the way, Johnny Depp turned up. Did anyone make anything of that?
He did. He was one of the few guests who was not actually introduced or referenced from the stage. But when Bono was singing Rainy Night in Soho, it was Johnny Depp was there. And it was one of those ones where you look up and you go, hang on a minute, that's Johnny Depp. But he was a very unobtrusive presence. He and Bono shared a hug at the end of the performance.
Listener wants to know, is last night's gig recorded for TV?
It has been recorded.
Oh, okay.
Oh, good. You saw something on Twitter from Peter McPartland.
Yeah, Peter, who we all know, posted a picture of the gig on Twitter and just put the last waltz in the heapity place. It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
It was unreal. Yeah. It was unreal. It felt like a dream.
Okay, listen, very quickly, your picks of the week. What's your one, please, John?
It's another new band, you'll be happy to know. They're called Shame. They're from Sarf, London.
Getting good at this new music.
I am, yeah. It's actually a great album. It's called Songs of Praise. And in a nutshell, it's got swagger, spit and shine.
Let's hear a bit of Concrete. That's all we have from it. I'm out of time. I'm telling you, talk too much about other things. What's your pick of the week, Nadine?
Turin Breaks, the new album, is out next week. It's called Invisible Storm. It is such an enjoyable, sunny, indie rock album. Well worth your time.
Okay. We will play out with a track called Wait. Thank you very much to John Cadell and Nadine O'Regan.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.